Hi, I'm Bede Hill, and this is The D Word, the show where we talk dementia. Welcome along, glad to have you company for another D Word here on UK Health Radio. One of the subjects we haven't covered on the show is health commissioning. Whilst it's vital in providing services, it's an area that can seem confusing at best. So I'm delighted to welcome Maddie McGober-Turbin from Care Tilt to tell us all about it. Maddie will be joining us right after this from Gersten Adamson.
Demons, let the night and the light.
the very talented Gersten Adamson and A Heart Is Burning Blue, kicking off this week's show, where my guest is Maddie McGober-Turbin from Hair Tilt. Maddie, it's a pleasure to welcome you as my guest here on The D Word, director of Hair Tilt. I mean, before we go into all that, I mean, can you give us a bit of background on how you got involved in this whole area of work?
Hi, Pete. Thanks for inviting me on. So my background is commissioning and brokerage from a local authority perspective.
Sorry, Maddie.
Let's start again.
Just go
I've
back.
I've got to switch my phone off.
That's right.
I'd completely forgotten.
Just take it as I've asked you that question and go from there.
Yeah, I'll start from there. So my background is commissioning and brokerage. I've been doing that for about 25 years across the country. I think one of the bugbears for me in terms of commissioning and brokerage is that when you need a vacancy in a care home or in a service, you can never find them in real time. So it was really around becoming the brokerage to the brokerage team so that we can link local authorities with providers of care and support across the country. So that's what Care Tilt does in a nutshell.
You know, most people would look at that and think, how does that all work? Because you get the situation of someone that needs care. And from a family point of view, it's person, care home, and don't really know about all the middle stuff. You know, and how does all that stuff work?
Yeah, it varies. So when you're looking at older people, that's when families get really involved because they'll be like choosing a care home or a nursing home for their mum or dad or something. So that's a little bit different because the families are a lot more involved. But when we're talking about learning disabilities, mental health and children, it's very much the social workers and the local authority who are choosing options really for people. And then placing them in those options as part of their assessment and referral. So it's a little bit more state involved, if you like, when you have specialist services. But for older people, because some of them are self-funded, it's a little bit different. But you very rarely get a self-funded person with learning disabilities, for example, because it's a statutory duty. So it will typically be funded by either the local authority or health. So it's a little bit different.
Yeah, you know, as you know, we're a dementia-based show. It's interesting to me how much the local authorities actually enter into that area or indeed, you know, what they know about. Just an example, people with learning disabilities are far more likely to have dementia, you know, in later ages. So, you know, do the LAs know all about this?
Yeah, so early onset dementia, particularly in people with learning disabilities, is known. The difficulty is it's very difficult to then get the right provision that sort of like manages dementia for older people and then manages dementia for people who might be like in their late 30s, early 40s, because, you know, the needs and wants of those groups are quite different. So it is quite a difficult way to, mix to be able to do that. The way that they've been doing it predominantly has been through a service called Extra Care. So typically Extra Care is like individual flats for individuals who are 55 plus or 65 plus in the area. And then you have 24-hour care for, you know, for the building, etc. However, they are looking at people with learning disabilities, maybe mental health, who may have early onset, entering in earlier so that they are getting that provision whilst also being able to have the independence that they would have in their 30s and 40s.
So it's a, you know, it's a whole interesting area you're opening up. I saw it said it almost like a booking.com for care needs. I don't know if that's an accurate description.
Well, so, I mean, eventually that's what it will be because the local authorities will have access to the directory and they'll be able to contact them directly. At the moment, we're the broker, so we're sort of sitting in between and having the conversations and sort of building those relationships. But eventually the system allows providers to put their vacancies on and take them off. And then it will allow local authorities to go on, search for what they need, specifically around needs. So if they need dementia care, they will sort of tick that box and then they'll be able to find services that are specific to that, as opposed to generic residential services They always say that they provide support for people with dementia, but that's not actually always the case. They don't always have the staffing levels, the training to be able to do that. So we have to be really careful about, so, you know, if people say they're a dementia specialist, then they need to be CQC registered for dementia so that it's really clear and people can see that before sort of putting their loved one in there. And then before you know it, it's like, you know, they're not getting the support or care that they need fully.
Yeah, and it's a, you know, it's a difficult thing, isn't it? That people, as they age, have varying needs, but those needs not always similar. And the fact that, you know, again, the old saying says, "Met one person with dementia, met one person with dementia." Everybody is different. I mean,
So different,
in terms of your kind of intermediary role, if I can call it that, how, you know, how do you ensure what you've just told me in terms of the people the commissioners referred to, their kind of level of expertise and ability to deal with these things?
so something like dementia care, we would ensure that, you know, they've been inspected. So the inspection will pick up on that, you know, on, you know, their ability to manage people with dementia. If that's not really in there, I wouldn't be suggesting to a local authority place someone, you know, in that service if this person maybe has a risk of absconding, you know, etc. You know, if the building isn't secure, you can kind of, you know, quite easily tell, or if it has really low staffing. So we would be asking care homes, sort of like, what's your staffing levels? What's your staffing ratios? To be able to see that they're able to meet the needs of people who do require just a little bit more observation and then a little bit more time with certain like personal care tasks or, you know, particular times of day. So a lot of care homes, for example, are great in the mornings. You know, they've got like 10 people on in the mornings. Then about lunchtime, it peters off to about six. And then evening, night, you might have three. But a lot of people with dementia, that's when they're most active. You know, they could be more active at night and you've kind of got the staff balance wrong. So we'd be asking providers about that. Like, what is your staff balance? What, how do you spread that across the day? If a local authority said to us, this person has got this level of dementia and these are their needs, we'd be looking for that.
Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It's all right for some, not all right for me, when the one that I'm loving slips around. You think it's fine to do things I cannot say, and you're doing it to me. Baby, can't you say that I know how it is? I can see it in your eyes and feel it in the way you kiss my lips. I can hear it in your voice whenever we are talking like this. right for some. Not all right to be where the one that I'm loving can't be found. The city where we live might be quite large, but the circle is small. Why not tell us all, and then all of us will know. I can see it in your eyes and feel it in the way you kiss my lips. I can hear it in your voice whenever we are talking like this. I can see what you believe in when his name is mentioned in the day. Watch the way you walk, the way you talk, the way you close your eyes. It's alright to live, but not alright to lie. When you come home and you can't say where you've been, you think it's fine to do things I cannot say, and you're doing it to me. Baby, can't you see that I know how it is? I can see it in your eyes and feel it in the way you kiss my lips. I can hear it in your voice whenever we are talking. See what you believe in when his name is mentioned in the day. I can watch the way you walk, the way you talk, the way you close your eyes. I can see it in your eyes and feel it in the way you.
Circle is Small from Gordon Lightfoot here on The D Word. Well, next week we'll be celebrating 300 episodes with a football and dementia special. Hope you can join me for that. But this week I'm chatting to Maddie McGober-Turpin from Care Tilt. That's kind of interesting. I mean, you know, what you're doing... let's put it this way, without you in the process, how would local authorities actually cope with, you know, some of the things you've just told me?
I mean, local authorities are really, really good at being able to figure those things out. So they go on the CQC website as well. The thing that they're not so good at is talking to providers about their rotas and how their rotas sort of sit, for example. So I think whilst we offer a sort of like a bit more nuance around the services so that we've got a bit more understanding, I do feel that local authorities, what they're really good at, which we're not able to do, is like working with the families and being really careful about ensuring choice and something that works. So for example, we might say these three homes are brilliant. They can meet John's needs, blah, blah, blah. And then they'll turn around and say, yeah, but John's wife lives this far away and he can't get to any of those homes. So we wouldn't have that information because we're not speaking to John's wife or children. We're literally only speaking to the local authority. So they have a lot more data to be able to base their information on. But we'll have a little bit more on the... We work really closely with the providers to understand their models and understand, you know, what's unique about their models, if anything, and ensuring that their models are safe. So we do a lot of that. But I feel like the brokerage teams and the local authorities really do a good job of trying to find out a lot. And especially within their local authority, they do know those homes really well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's interesting, you know, it's a perfect mix, isn't it? The local authority know all about the person and know about the family. And, you know all about the other end where they're going to be placed. So, I mean, does this happens throughout the country, I guess. And in what you're trying to set up, does that happen as well?
There's a couple of providers who have tried to do this in the past. Unfortunately, I think timing-wise, it wasn't a great time. So I know of an organization that tried it around COVID. So unfortunately, they launched just before COVID, didn't work, didn't take off. There's another organization up in Nottingham, they do something similar, which is good because it means that, you know, there's a model that people sort of recognize. So it's a good thing. It's something that providers are really quick to sign up to it because they understand the need of sort of spreading their message further afield. But local authorities, a bit slower, mainly because most people work from home now. So it's like you can't just call the council and say, "Can I speak to your brokerage team, please?" It's not the same as sort of 6, 7 years ago where they all, you know, you'd just be calling people. It's all email. So it's a little bit slower to get local authorities on board, but that's not a bad thing. It just means it's a slower process than we would like.
And I guess one thing you've got to look out for is kind of impending local government reorganisation as well. I mean, is that going to have a big effect?
I think so, but in a good way, because at the moment, a lot of the providers only work with the local authority that they're in. With the devolution of local authorities, take for example something like Lincolnshire. If the three Lincolnshires join together, then you've got three teams potentially trying to get places within Lincolnshire. That's perfect for you as a provider because you've got like, well, it's not triple because one of them's really big compared to the others, but you know what I mean? You're getting a lot more inquiries for your vacancies, so it's a good thing in a way. It will be messy. Because obviously they'll be trying to, you know, reduce teams down. And there is a risk actually that some local authorities might, you know, let's say a brokerage team knows some providers, stick to the providers they know, and then they don't work with anyone that, you know, was from one of the other local authorities that came in. So there is a little bit of a risk that, you know, you'll have a gap of time where, you know, it goes a bit quiet for you, which I think again, that's where Care Tilt steps in because we're able to sort of work across. So we don't have that sort of link to certain providers in a certain local authority.
Yeah, and I guess it's a good thing to have you've got a holistic view, haven't you, to know what's going on and where it's going on. Actually, I've got to ask you, the title, Care Tilt, where did that come from?
So the site already existed during COVID time, so you know, I bought the name from somebody else. And he was using it for PPE provision at the time. But then I was just thinking around sort of like tilting the focus, you know, towards the vacancies. So I was kind of like, you know, sort of, you know, we're a pivot, trying to move away from how we do things. So it's a bit of a market disruptor, but I think that's a good thing in some ways. But yeah, we kind of quite like the name. If people say to us in a year or two, we don't like it. We're not wedded to it forever, you know what I mean? But things like, you know, placement finder, etc. If you have a name that's very, you know, difficult to as an SEO, then people don't find you. You know, at the moment, a lot of our searches are organic, so people are putting placement finder in and they're finding Care Tilt, etc. But you know, typically, if you just put placement finder, there was another organisation called Placement Finder. They've changed their name to Place Central. That would be. Yeah, so we're just trying to sort of like make it a little bit unique, a little bit playful. You know, so it's not sort of like a really serious name. And hoping that sort of, yeah, you know, we'll do different things. This is the first bit of the journey, but we will try and do different things where we sort of slightly disrupt the market, slightly in favor of the providers, because, you know, it's really difficult for them to sort of build whole businesses when they're dependent on local authority funding, and the local authorities are being, you know, having their budgets cut, you know, under the new government and stuff. So it's very difficult.
Ever since first grade, felt so out of place. On the swing set all alone, I'm in church and sometimes I just wonder what they all know that I don't. Fight with my parents just like cats and dogs. Sometimes I'll keep them up all night. I'll wear my Sunday best, but it never fit quite right. You can find me growing with the weeds, my long hair blowing in the breeze. that's my finest hour. I'm a wild flower. Was never dainty like a rose or sunny like a marigold. I was made for the meadow in the cracks of rocks, old fences by the road. I don't belong in a vase sitting pretty on a windowsill, 'cause I'm the lily of the valley loud up on a hill. You can find me growing with the weeds, my long hair blowing in the breeze. Forever young, forever free. God broke the mold when he made me. I was born to run, don't belong to anywhere or anyone. When it rains it pours, but that's my finest hour. Upon the wind into the world, imperfectly made perfect, but just right by heaven's hand. Maybe always being different was just all part of the plan. You can find me growing with the weeds, my long hair blowing in the breeze. Forever young, forever free. God broke the mold when he made me. I was born to run, don't belong to anywhere or anyone. And when it rains it pours, but that's my finest hour. And when it rains it pours, but that's my finest hour. 'Cause I'm a wild flower.
Sandy Olive and Wildflower. TDWradio@gmail.com is the email if you'd like to be my guest here on The D Word. Health commissioning is our focus this week with my guests, Maddie McGober-Turpin from Care Tilt. Yeah, with a, you know, you've kind of preempted where I was going. I was going to, you know, ask a question about that and the whole kind of social care agenda, which has left, as you say, local authorities short of finance. It's left people wondering where to go and what to do. And, you know, big question. But, you know, what are your views on, you know, how we kind of get around all that?
We've been here before. It's not the first time. Whenever the economy is wobbly, the first thing they do is look at budgets that they have, you know, that are centralised. So something like social care, health is taking a hit. So we have to take a hit. It's not shocking. However, I do feel like they call it the cost of care exercise. I do feel like it will penalise those who've done really well up to now. And then, you know, hope I think it's going to spread the distribution further up north in the country. So, you know, they're winners and losers. I don't think everybody, you know, will fare well from it. But we just have to adjust as local authorities and sort of push on. It's not great for the market. And it's not great for individuals because they may have less choice. So local authorities might turn around and say, no, you know, that's a lovely care home, but we can't put your mum there because it's just too expensive. It's outside of our, you know, and that's unfortunate because, you know, most people are only going to go into a home for hopefully a few years or something. So you wouldn't want, you know, their choices to be limited at that point based on cost. But I think that's probably the biggest risk, is that you'll have a lot less choice in the market if local authorities are paying the majority of it. There may be more top-ups. They may be saying to families, actually, if you want to go and live in that place, you need to pay £300-£400 a week on top of whatever we're willing to pay. And I mean, in some areas that might be okay, but there's a lot of areas, you know, where there's high deprivation and you can't, people don't have an extra £300-£400 a week to top up, you know. £50, you might be able to, you know, maybe push it, but like, yeah, £400, that's typically what top ups are turning into right now. That's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the other things, we're in a kind of seem to be in a period of constant change. And we've, you know, got a recent government consultation on the NHS as well. Is that going to feed into the mix?
We all would like to think that they would talk to each other, but let's be honest, they never do until it's too late. And then we're like, oh, we should have spoken to, you know. So I don't think it is, because the ICBs, they were hit quite hard about 6-7 months ago. And now local authorities are being told in the November budget they're going to be hit quite hard as well. So they don't really talk to each other. Health is very much seen as quite different to social care. Unless somebody has what we call continuing health care, which is very high level of needs, maybe end of life, they don't get considered by health. They become a social care budget responsibility. And so there is this kind of almost competition between health and local, like, who gets this one? And you know, they squabble. They'll say, like, no, they don't quite meet the threshold to be, you know, continuing healthcare. It's yours, you know. And then maybe they're on continuing healthcare for a year and they're still alive. Then they're like, you need to get them back because they're clearly not end of life. So there's a lot of kind of financial squabbling that can happen between health and local authorities.
Yeah, and that, you know, there's a big question in terms of dementia as a condition, because dementia is incurable, and in effect, it's a terminal condition, although that terminality can take a number of years. But it doesn't seem to go along and be applied like other terminal conditions, and it seems to carers of people living with dementia that suddenly they've ignored us here. You know, why are they ignoring us?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because if you say something is terminal, then you are saying it's end of life, and like I say, that does mean that health would have to pick it up, and health doesn't want to pick it up. If you say it's more chronic, you know, like a chronic condition, then it sits with social care. And as you say, some people dementia good 10-15 years, you know, it's not all like, you know, within a very short period of time. It depends, everyone's dementia is very different. So I think it's really, again, it boils down to funding discussions, and terminology such as terminal does lend itself more to health than it does to social care. So I think that's why they wouldn't say that it's terminal.
It's kind of interesting, isn't it? This whole health, social care argument, that there is so many overlaps and so much grey area in between. You know, we've just been chatting and picking out things that, well, could be health, could be social care. And, simplistic viewpoint, wouldn't it be brilliant if we just had one organisation dealing with the whole lot?
And some local authorities and ICBs, that's the integrated commissioning boards, that's health, they are mixed. You know, you have integrated commissioning, so you have the social care and the social and the health together. And where I've seen that work sort of functional, it works really, really well, depending on where the person has come from. So if they've come from a health background and they're moving into the local authority, it works amazingly. If they're from a local authority background and they're going into health, very frustrating, because health systems are so different, and you know, there's more priorities, there's more acute issues at stake there in their budget. So it makes sense when it sits within local authorities, but the person coming into the local authorities from a health background. And then it feels seamless. It does feel really seamless and it does work. But for some reason, it was a big thing around about 2004 to 2007. Then we had a 2008 recession. That was it. So that integration, it's happened in other places since, but that integration that was building up really nicely and has worked really well just sort of disappeared. But it is a shame. And you may see that with the new budgets, that you are seeing a lot more integration of those budgets to try to meet that need.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with a skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I can't seem to learn not to love you, 'cause you get to me every time. You're someone I just can't say no to. You're so good at changing my mind. Here I go down the wrong road again, going back where I've already been, even knowing where. Here I go down the wrong road again. Though I see the web that you're weaving, you and your soft, easy line, before I stop to think, I'm believing and falling for you one more time. Here I go down the wrong road again, going back where I've already been, even knowing where it will end, love. Here I go down the wrong road again. Here I go down the wrong road again, going back where I've already been, even knowing where it will end, love. Here I go down the wrong road again. here I go down the wrong road again.
Waylon Jennings going down that road again. If you missed any editions of The D Word, or you want to catch up with any of our shows on UK Health Radio, everything you need is available on the website at ukhealthradio.com or from the brand new UK Health Radio app. Back to my guest now, Maddie McGober-Turpin. Really interesting what you mentioned, actually, because, you know, my previous career, I went from a local government background to being seconded to what were then the Health Protection Agency. And like you say, I couldn't believe the difference between the two, because everybody thinks that, you know, you're a civil servant, government department or whatever, you know, you all work the same. But it seems crazy that, like you say, you know, everybody doesn't operate the same systems and even have the same values that I found.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think, you know, some of it is valid because health is working at a different part of the system. So they are working at the kind of more acute part of the system where they really need to get things done. The only part of that in social care is really safeguarding, etc., but not so much as health, where it's like life or death, basically. So I get that. But the way that, you know, the NHS and health have developed is so different from the rest of public sector that it's very difficult for people to move into health at a later part of their career. I think it's a lot of integrated commissioners have gone into health and come back out and said couldn't cope. I was an integrated commissioner in mental health back in around 2007, and you know, that was okay because I worked for the local authority, but whenever I met with the Mental Health Trust, or what was then the CCG, which is now the ICB, I was like, we're not speaking the same language. We need a translator in the room because we just got different values, different wants, you know, different outcomes for these contracts. So it's hard to work across them.
Do you think, you know, for the general public, this is kind of all pie in the sky stuff that's going on, and it would be better if it was made a little bit more obvious how these things work? Because I'm sure I've got a lot of listeners who are listening to this thinking, well, I didn't know how it worked like that.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because everyone talks about transparency and the need to know. But I've sat in reviews with families and providers, and I've said, look, you're charging us £3,000 a week for this person. And the family's like, £3,000? You know, like they had no clue that this was the rate, etc. So there is something around, let's have a little bit more openness about, you know, how this process will work, especially when they're bringing their child or their parent into the system for the first time. Why would they know? You know, this is the first time they're doing something like this, and maybe the only time that they'll do it. So they're not in the system continuously. So it would be really great if people explained it. We do have a couple of explanation notes on our website, which just helps people sort of like, this is what you need to think about. These are the questions that you need to ask, because we get a lot of families coming to us and we're saying, we can't help you because that's not what we do. Don't work with families. But, you know, ask these questions when you're speaking to your social worker and see if that can help you get a better understanding of it.
Yeah, we have, you know, a few people on the show, actually quite recently, talking about health advocacy and, you know, how you actually get involved in the system and don't get blinded by science, as it were, to, you know, simple things. I've seen it on your website. And as you say, it's really knowing what questions to ask. And also, I think I've found not being in awe of the people that you're talking to. And sometimes I feel that people are put a bit too much on a pedestal.
It's the same with doctors, isn't it? You go to a doctor, you tell them something, and then everybody's like, well, the doctor said, and you're like, oh, do you want to go and get a second opinion? Oh, no, the doctor knows everything. And unfortunately, we do live in a society where we do put people on a pedestal and think that they know better. But that's why I think it's really important to self-advocate where you can. Obviously, not when you've got dementia, but it's really important to self-advocate where you can and to have advocates around you, whether that be family, friends, next of kin. or even legal advocates to support you through something like this, because it is really difficult to navigate, and it is really difficult to say, no, I don't want that. I don't want my mum travelling from Buckinghamshire to Milton Keynes. Sorry, me to be travelling to my mum, and it's actually an hour and a half, although they're really close. They're at the other ends of the two local, you know, local councils. So it's things like that. It's really hard. And I do see families being very frustrated when they, you know, someone's in care, because they're like, this isn't what we expected. We weren't listened to at the beginning of the process. I always say to families, write everything down. You know, make sure you've had a conversation with the social worker. They've told you A, B, C. Take a note. You know what I mean? Email it back to them. Trust me, the loudest people, you know, that advocate on behalf of their loved ones are the people that get the results. When you're quiet and you're like, oh, I'm all right, dear, anywhere for me, just want a bed and a meal, you'll end up in somewhere that requires improvements on the CQC, so, you know, it's not 100% working well, etc., because they're like, well, they're not making noise. So I always say, make as much noise as, you know, in a respectful way, but make sure that you're advocating for the people you need to advocate for.
Yeah, you know, absolutely, 100% support that. In terms of, you know, it's really interesting, this conversation. What's kind of coming across is kind of right at the beginning of the process. Wouldn't it be nice if kind of everybody got together around the table, all the parties that have a, you know, I don't know the word, stakeholder, if you like, in this, and it'd be a lot smoother if it all worked like that.
And it's supposed to work like that. So you're meant to have all the stakeholders at the very beginning. But depending on how the person became known to social services, for example, it might be that they've gone into hospital and it's not, you know, there isn't the time necessarily to really get those meetings done in. If they're at home and they're receiving care and then they realise that they need to move into a care home, that's a little bit different. So you should have time to get the right people in the room, etc. And that would be great. And actually, it's OK to say, I need to wait until, you know, I can be there for my mum or dad, or, you know, so I think it's that as well. It's like, don't let them rush you.
We're running out of time, Maddie. It's been really fascinating. I just, you know, really wanted to give you the opportunity. Well, what are your kind of hopes for the, you know, future of this, this whole thing?
Well, we'd just like to grow it so that it's across the country and people can move quicker and not be in limbo. I think that's our aim. Apologies, it's just caught me, my throat.
No, don't worry. No, that's fine. No, that's it. You know, that's a good aim. And we wish you every success in doing it. And thanks very much for coming on the show and, you know, explaining to us, I think, a complicated world that we all now know a little bit more about.
Thank you for having me on the show, Pete.
Many thanks to Maddie, and if you'd like to find out more, then head to the website caretilt.co.uk. That's it for this week. Thanks to Angelo, my production assistant. Next week, we reach 300 shows with the first episode of a D-Word Football and Dementia special. As I welcome former football and rugby league professional Roy Heaney as my guest. So until then, thanks for listening and take care now.